Welcome back, WNST and Baltimore Positive. We're in the studio today, and we got special stuff going on, Don Mohler. I mean, a special election coming up, 7th Congressional, and lots of candidates. And I know you know a lot of them, but not all of them. We're going to get to know them here at Baltimore Positive.
And we're going to give our listeners and viewers a chance to get to know them. We're going to start with District 12 Delegate Terry Hill's working hard in Annapolis right now. We caught her between a meeting. Terry, how you doing?
I'm doing great. And it's good to talk with both of you today.
Happy New Year. Thanks for being with us. Terry, we're going to ask similar questions of all of the candidates. This election, I mean, give us a sense, first of all. Nestor and I shake our head about this calendar. Let me see. You run February 4th, and then if you win February 4th, you run again April 28th. Correct me if I'm wrong. And then if you win April 28th, you run again November 3rd?
Absolutely.
That's three races. That's almost as many games as the Ravens had to win in January.
Exactly. So, no, it's two different races, and I think the voters do need to understand that, you know, first, someone has to be chosen to complete Congressman Cummings' term, and that term ends January 2021. That's what the special election is for, with the primary on February 4th, and the actual special election April 28th. And in order to save money, the April 28th special election is being held at the same time that we were already prepared to have the regular primary that we have every year during or every presidential campaign season. So folks in Congressional District 7, will get two ballots on April 28th. One will have essentially a nominee from the Democratic Party, a nominee from the Republican Party, and any write-ins or not write-ins, but any independent or unaffiliated who are running for that seat. And that will determine who is going to complete the term. And they will get the second long ballot with the presidential nominees. And if they're in the city, they'll get, you know, the mayoral nominees for their party, the county council nominees for their party, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And elsewhere they make it judicial or other folks. So that will be the primary with the final outcome determined in November as to who will serve as the congresswoman for the next 2 years. So the February 4th, no early voting, is the party primaries where the Republicans and the Democrats will pick their nominee to complete the term.
And it's important to note, I think that you made a point there, no early voting.
Right.
You know, because people have gotten used to early voting here in the state.
Absolutely.
And we don't have early voting. I guess, Delegate, what we start with everyone, it seems to me, in this discussion is we're talking about replacing a giant of a man.
Yes.
Not just any congressman, someone whose shadow is huge. Tell our voters, our listeners, particularly those in the 7th, why Delegate Terry Hill is the best one to carry on that legacy.
Well, I think that what we're really talking about is not someone to fill his shoes, right, because that would be impossible, but it's someone who understands the issues and the problems that our not only our district is facing, but that our nation is facing, and has the passion and the energy and the enthusiasm, and I would say the track record and the skill set to go down to Washington and effectively represent our interests both as Marylanders and as Americans. And so I have all those attributes. As you know, Don, I've been representing a significant part of the Congressional 7th as the representative for District 12 in the legislature since 2015. So I do have legislative experience. In addition to that, for close to 30 years, I've been serving the people in the entire area as a physician, as a plastic surgeon, you know, taking call and working out of multiple emergency rooms and hospitals, taking care of everyone from patients who are doing reconstruction after breast cancer to patients who've had skin cancers that I'm removing and working with to burn patients to people who are victims of assault or rape or what have you. So this whole range of patients, so I am known in the community, and the same kind of dedication, the focus on detail, the need to get to root causes of problems and to look for solutions that are sustainable. That's what I was trained to do, and that's what I've been doing for let's say nearly 30 years right here in Congressional 7. And so it's that combination as a trained listener and problem solver, and as well as a legislator who's had success and been able to pass and sponsor and pass bills for each of the five sessions that I've been serving, whose voice is one that is respected and who has clearly seen that the perspective of a practicing clinician who can speak to what patients experience, not just in the field of medicine when they're dealing with medical issues, but what they experience in their everyday lives, has been respected. And I've had influence on a number of issues and bills that have come through, and my colleagues seek my advice because it is a different perspective.
Well, you had a pretty good gig, right? I mean, you know, you're trained to do something else other than run for office. Obviously, a passion play for you, and then this next special election as well. But getting involved just in serving to begin with, some thoughts about making that kind of a transition from a regular life into serving, right, and now dedicating your life to 4+ years of doing this.
Right. I mean, it's a calling, right? So, as I'm sure both of you are, I'm spiritually guided. And so I know that that in my life, the best decisions I've ever made are the decisions that were not mine. And the worst decisions I've ever made were the ones where I thought I was in charge and directing what I wanted to do. And so you're right. I've had a lifetime of service. It comes from a family commitment to social justice and a family commitment to service and understanding and love of the political process and respect for that process. And my advocacy for people, particularly people who are marginalized or whose voices aren't well heard, has always been part of it. That's, again, it reflects in why I chose to go into medicine in the first place. But it's always been there. And so for me, I think the real turning point in terms of my stepping out into running for office was when I became aware of efforts like the voter ID, what I call voter suppression efforts, that were going on around the country, when I really woke up to see how aggressively people were working to undermine workers' rights and to destroy the unions, the same unions that built our middle class. And there were other things. Our environmental laws were being stripped away. So I watched during the Obama administration, while wonderful things were happening and many of us in America were beginning to feel very hopeful that the promise of our founding documents was within reach, that at the same time there were elements working very hard to turn us into a less caring, a less diverse, a less open nation. And it was clear that we were changing one way or the other, right? That in 20 years we would look back on the early part of the 21st century and found out that America had become something different. And it was clear to me that if politics had ever been a spectator sport, it was no longer, and that all of us had an obligation to get engaged and to step up. And the question for me was, what does that mean for someone who has been engaged in the political process, supporting candidates, supporting issues, speaking up, advocating? And it was around that time that my delegate, Liz Bobo, who had who was a neighbor and had become a friend, had suggested to me that I consider running for her seat because she was going to retire after 24 years in the General's Assembly, and she actually said she couldn't think of anyone who she'd rather have represent her. And so it was her planting that seed after the itch. You know, the ground had been tilled saying, you've got to step up. You have an obligation to do more. What does that look like? And with her support and former delegates Jimmy Malone and Steve Deboy and Senator Ed Casemire at the time.
These are some legendary people you're talking about, Terry.
In the district. And I respect them. I learned from them. I'm so grateful for their support. And they saw in me the kind of fighter that we needed. And they, you know, supported my candidacy through the primary and then through the general election and continue to work with and mentor me through my time in Annapolis. So that was it. I mean, it was clear that something was stirring, and that was what I did. And it's been a wonderful experience. I've been blessed to have patients and staff who really have supported that transition and are very understanding of the kind of juggling that I have to do with my schedule. And you're right. I mean, it's been a nice balance. And as I said, I've been an effective legislator. I think that I know that my constituency have been, you know, surprised and pleased with how responsive responsive I've been to constituent issues and how present I've been able to be, which should not be a surprise because, as I said, you know, my profession has been about getting those calls at 2 in the morning or 3 in the afternoon and juggling your schedule to be where your patient needs you to be. So where your constituents need you to be, to the extent that I'm able to do it without having to duplicate who I am, I'm going to be there. And I think that that's one of the things you talked about, the giant that Elijah Cummings has been. That's one of the things that really made him well-loved in our community is because if you needed him, he was there. So, and it didn't matter whether you were, you know, calling from somewhere in the city or the northwest part of Baltimore County or southwest Baltimore County or all the way out in Howard County, he would be there. He showed up, and he cared about what happened. And that's the same kind of advocacy that I've already demonstrated the ability to do. Now, Nestor, to your point, this is a big change, right? So if I and when I win this congressional race, I am really saying that after 28 years of building a practice, a solo practice that is near and dear to me, that I would be willing to give that up because it is hard to imagine how I could be serving full-time in D.C. and keep that same balance that I've been able to keep as a, you know, 90-day session and full-time advocate legislator in Annapolis. So I'd have to give that up. I'd have to go from a position where if I chose to run again, if I felt like there was still something I had to offer, in Annapolis you run, what, every 4 years, to going down to Congress where you have to run every 2 years, right? And more than that, I would be leaving a body where I have been effective and where my voice is respected to go, frankly, down to a body where it seems sometimes that nobody seems to be respected or getting anything done.
Well, I want to Terry, I want to stop you. That's interesting. That's a great point because that was my next question. You're going down. You're going to be a backbencher. You know, I think you certainly would hope that if you get down there, you're still the majority party in the House, but you're going to be one of 435. That's the way it is. And I think you nailed it. Poll after poll, the only thing that polls lower than President Trump in a lot of these polls is the approval of Congress. People are disgusted with Congress. They're disgusted with politics as usual. They're disgusted with what they see as just this constant partisan battle. And we can point all the fingers we want, and certainly, you know, Nestor and I believe that the president has really contributed to an acceleration of that kind of dialogue. What does one congresswoman, what does a Terry Hill do to try to reach across the aisle and change that a little bit when you go down the road, down Route 95?
I think you know, what I would be is authentic. Right. So again, my life and my career is about taking care and doing service across all areas. I don't ask people before I decide to work for them or what their politics are. I love politics. I love talking about it. I'll talk about religion too. Things you're not. I'll talk about what kind of money you make. So I'll have those conversations. But that doesn't stop me from seeing who the people are in their hearts, right? And so understanding that everybody wants the same things. Everyone in the Congressional 7th wants to have communities that they can live in that are safe, where they have affordable housing and a comfortable lifestyle, where their children can get a quality education and have the opportunity to then get jobs that pay a sustainable wage that allow them to support their families. That's what we all want. That's what we all want. And once you understand that and you have the experience of working with and talking to people through the range, I mean, of social economic backgrounds, ethnic backgrounds, racial, religious backgrounds, as I have, you know, people are people. So it's being fair, it's being honest, it's being a person of integrity, and being willing to listen. And so one of the characteristics that has defined my time in Annapolis is that I have the reputation for being someone who questions things and listens to answers and asks the folks to think about things a little bit differently and to look for solutions in ways that we might not have looked before. And sometimes I guess that pushes people a little bit because they like to do things the way it's always been done. And I think that, you know, we hear very little about people being disgusted with necessarily the newer folks in Washington, but they are disgusted with some of the older folks, some of whom I have great respect for, but it's the doing things the old way. Now, there's some great things that used to happen when people actually worked in Washington and didn't run back after 3 days to go back to their districts, and you built relationships. It's all about relationship building, and that's a skill that I have. So I think you have to know what you stand for and stand up for those principles, but be understanding enough to know that sometimes people's perspectives and their needs are very different from your own.
But Terry, yeah. Jumping in, and I know you've been gracious. I really appreciate it, but you've been gracious to break into your legislative schedule. We can't have a doctor on here because we have major issues. But my guess is you have some pretty strong feelings about where the nation ought to be heading in health care. And regardless of who wins in November, the presidential election, health care is going to be front and center. So where does Congresswoman Terry Hill stand on where the American nation ought to be going in terms of health care? Topic, by the way, near and dear to Nestor.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, the easy stuff that people look at is, are we talking about a health care system that's a rebuild of Obamacare, that's a strip back to what we had, you know, and was failing 15, 20 years ago? Are we talking about universal health care, single-payer system? And where I stand on those issues is that I think that if, you know, 170-some countries have figured out how to sustain quality health care and keep costs controlled by some type of single-payer universal system, that's ultimately where we're going. But what we need to do is make sure that we get buy-in and that we transition in a way that Americans are on board and helpful. So there was a lot of back and forth about the ACA, right? I think it was a great start. It was never supposed to be the whole solution, and I think we need to do the things to shore it up and expand upon it. There were people who thought that after causing, frankly, for a lot of lies and fear-mongering, that people would want to see the ACA go away. But we saw Republican House after House after House and Senate try and repeal that, and Americans said, we like it, just make it better and lower the cost. So the focus has to be on how we lower the cost.
Well, Terry, tied into that, and Nestor, you know, you talk often about your wife being a diabetic and we have insulin needs. This hit home for me the other day, and I want you to talk about the price of prescription drugs. I went to the pharmacy to pick up a prescription, and when the pharmacist came forward, he said, it'll be $189. And I said, excuse me?
Mm-hmm.
He goes, it's $189. I said, no. And again, I'm one of those people blessed enough because I worked in county government to have good health care. I said, no, I think it's just a couple of dollars. And he walked back and he said, well, give me a second. And he looked at the computer. He said, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Mower. He said, they didn't apply your insurance.
Mm-hmm.
It was $2.89.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's my thought. That's great
for you,
for Don and Linda Moeller.
Right.
That's
right.
Terrible
but,
for everybody else.
The guy down the street with no health care probably can't afford $189.
Well,
so
the
what
other
are
part
we,
of this is where the truck company is making this kind of money. That's
right.
Really the issue here, right?
It shouldn't be that much, right? So there are a number of approaches that we need to take, and frankly, I think it's all of the above. I'm first of all proud that in Maryland we are the first state to set up a prescription drug affordability board. And I will say, when we talk about how my voice is heard, I am the person that offered the amendment on the bill as introduced that has allowed it to be set up without legal challenge. And it was basically taking my experience and saying that what we were trying to do, which was to say that we're going to set not what we said 2 years ago, which was that we would set a limit to what could be charged in the state. Instead, we would set a limit on what could be paid for certain prescription drugs that were being overpriced. That I said, you can't do that for the privates, but we can do it as the state for the people who fall under our plans. And so by doing that, we set the standard. And I know from my experience that once that's set, the private insurers will fall in line. They will use that as the floor, and they will use that as a negotiating tactic for their insured, and that will bring that pricing down. Now, it takes a while for that to happen, but that's a good start. But there are other things that we can do, and I think just this idea that taxpayers, American taxpayers, spend a great amount of money to subsidize the research, and we want to have that research, and then we pay out of the nose at the back end for the cost, we should follow follow the model that feds do in other things. So as a provider, when I take Medicare patients, the rule says I can charge whatever I want to my patients, and I can have differing fees, but I can't charge a Medicare patient more than the patient I charge the least. So why aren't we saying to these drug companies, we gave you research money, when you finally come out with a drug on the market, you can't charge Americans more than what the country you charge the least.
We could talk for hours. You've got to get back to hearings and other meetings. Terry, real quick, one of the things seems to me basic. We'll ask every candidate. Let's test your knowledge of the district. Where is the 7th District of the state of Maryland?
The 7th District of the state of Maryland is located in Baltimore County, into Baltimore City, into Baltimore County, and out to Howard County.
And you would like everybody to mark February 4th. Let's take it step by step.
Absolutely.
First of all, mark February 4th. Come on, Baltimore Positive. Listen to Delegate Terry Hill and the other candidates. You hope at the end of the day they're going to say, you know what?
Right.
Delegate Hill's the right person to succeed.
And I'm going to just add one other thing, if I may, gentlemen.
Yeah, you're on the clock.
Number
one,
time. We have a wonderful Maryland delegation of 9 men.
Okay.
Okay? And we talk about diversity. We talk about diverse voices and representation. I don't think that we can stand proudly, even though male allies are a wonderful thing to have. The fact of the matter is they are not in the lane. And when women's reproductive rights are under assault, when women's health care is under assault, when women's voices are missing in so many different issues, from violence and guns to the environment, to not have a woman representing us in that delegation is a shame. Number two, I don't think that anyone looks at Washington and says, you know what we need in Washington? We need another lawyer. You know what we need in Washington? We need another policy expert. We've got plenty of those, okay? But what we don't have is the kind of voice that I bring that comes both with experience of advocacy, legislating, being present, showing up, and having that understanding that makes a difference when we talk about evidence-based data and how it impacts our solutions so they're sustainable for our communities.
Well, Terry, full disclosure, Delegate Terry Hill is Nestor, my delegate, does a great job representing us in Catonsville. Terry, thanks for jumping in and taking this plunge and being willing to go out there and say, I'm the one. We appreciate you coming on Baltimore Positive, and we appreciate all our sponsors, Fadley's, Jennings, State Fair, Center Maryland, making this series possible. Terry, good luck in the next month or so.
Thank you, gentlemen, and thanks for having me. I'll be happy to come back again.
Crowded Field.
Love to do it.
Terry Hill joining us here on Baltimore Positive. We are putting episode after episode together on the back end of our trip with the Maryland Hospital Association, as well as Governor Martin O'Malley. You're not going to want to miss that one from down at Fadley's.
That's going to be Super Bowl week, right?
Absolutely. That's Super Bowl week. And then, of course, all of the congressional candidates who are willing to come on, we're having on. So you'll hear from all of them. And it is quite a crowded field. I am Nestor. He is Don Moeller. We are Baltimore Positive. And this is WNST.net, AM 1570, WNST Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore Positive and Baltimore issues.